Welcome back, everybody. It's time for the third episode of season four, the 15-minute job, and I've got Corey back with me to talk about it.
Yay!
Yay! Are you excited for season four?
I am excited. This episode was great. Also, I have not been rewatching the show like with the podcast, so I sometimes like haven't watched an episode in a while, and it struck me while I was watching this one how comfortable everybody is in like their skin and how much like emotional growth all the characters have had in terms of everybody kind of just like knowing where they're at, except Nate, and
who's even worse off.
It was really striking, having not watched an episode since the season three episode, how much work the actors have done to like get the characters feeling like they are more like in their roles in the team. So I'm excited for season four to like all of the big emotional stuff that happens in season four.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It very much feels like this is just a day in the life. Like you know, they've got inside joke things that they've been arguing about, like don't bring up that Star Trek stuff again, and you know,
Star Wars.
But like clearly it
gets brought up a lot in this episode, and yeah. I'm really sad every time they talk about CGI Yoda that we don't get to hear Hardison fall in love with the baby Yoda puppet.
Oh my gosh.
That puppet is the love of my life, and I just want to see Hardison talk about how much better the puppet is than the CGI.
Yeah, and he like sits everybody down and he's like, look, you're gonna fall in love. Elliot sheds one manful tear, and Elliot is the Mandalorian, and he's like, okay, I have adopted this baby Yoda.
The baby is mine now.
And Parker's like, okay, yeah, I get it. I see it now. I see it. Yeah, no, that totally happened.
That happened.
Yeah.
Here they are right now.
Yeah. Somewhere.
Having a thruple date watching The Mandalorian on their couch.
And Elliot's like, I thought it was Netflix and chill. And Hardison's like, no, no, no. It's Disney Plus and pay attention.
It's like, I thought we were fooling around. And Hardison's like, they're just a Yoda. But shut up.
He like smacks his hand away. He's like, look at the screen.
We're not fooling around.
Exactly.
That's what happened.
Yeah, I 100% believe that. I'm so excited to talk about this OT3 stuff in this episode. Okay, so this episode, to get back on topic and the factual things, it aired on July 10th, 2011. It was directed by Mark Roskin, and it was written by a newbie to the writing team, Josh Scheer, who hasn't done a ton since, but he was like really big in the show Jericho. He was like a writer and executive producer or something for Jericho. And he actually, when he came in to like not audition but apply for this job, he brought this idea as like here, this is what I think I could write for the show. And they were like, that's a great idea. Let's have it be the first thing you do.
Yay.
Yeah, so in this episode, the team uses the siren call of fame to ruin a PR executive's name and rescue the reputation of an old friend of Nate's. And right a couple other wrongs while they're at it.
Yeah, several. They go all out.
Yeah. So much so that, like, our initial victim kind of gets forgotten, and then he like shows up at the end. I'm like, oh, that guy.
Oh yeah, that's why we're doing this whole thing.
Yeah, which I think is sort of the point.
Yeah,
because Nate's gonna get so embroiled in this. But we open up with the bad guy, who's named Reed Rockwell, and he's played by Michael Gladys, who you're gonna hate.
Gives good evil face.
He gives good evil face, but also Corey, find him attractive. No, you will not agree, but it was very
okay. So he, I can see,
not when he's being evil.
I can, well, sure, I mean, I'm a Slytherin, so that's
still not am I. Still am I, but like, if I'm going to be attracted to someone, it's not because they're evil, because I'm the evil one. it's yeah, we can't have more than one evil, manipulative, ambitious
one person. Slytherin per relationship. Yeah. So
that's why people ship Drury.
Yeah. Yeah. So despite my not often finding men hot, I definitely see his like kind of vibe. He would definitely be hot in a like slightly less slimy role. Yeah.
Unfortunately, his other big role was in Mad Men. So
yeah, no, it's that's what he does.
Yeah. And he has a beard in Mad Men, and I'm not into that.
Mm.
But yeah. Yeah, I was just like, no, I don't want to. No. but they originally brought him in to audition for the role of Hurley from the 12-step program. 12-step.
Okay. Draft. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
One, I think is hilarious imagining him as Hurley. Two, I love that.
He could do that well.
I think he could do it, but they were like, he's too in control.
Yeah.
Like, air off of like, he's in control of everything that he does. And Hurley needed to be like a hot mess.
Yeah.
But I love that he auditioned for a 12 and he got cast in a 15.
15. Yeah.
So he is, yeah, he's sitting in his like studio and we see him like expertly, weirdly angled half away from his screens to like talk to his like henchmen, talking about like his, I don't know, his theories and the reason why he's like, oh yeah, we can take down this state's attorney. Just people love him and we just have to plant a seed of doubt and then that's how our heroes fall. Or he says only heroes fall.
He gives this great villain monologue like within the first 2 minutes of the episode.
It's literally the first thing that happens.
We've never met this guy before and he's villain monologuing. Just
we're like, okay, and we're watching him Photoshop this poor man out of a wholesome birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
And we're giving him a drink. We're giving him pills on the table behind him. We're like making his eyes red. We're putting a blonde woman on his arm. It's like, wow. Wow.
And, he's unlike Hurley. He is not set up to be in iota of, well, this guy's not so bad. He's just a mess.
Right. Like, no. No.
Pure villain.
Yeah. And you like, yeah, we see more evidence of that, but there are parts where I can see, okay, yeah, I can see him being Hurley when he is kind of sweet. And then you're like, no, but you're horrible.
Horrible.
bad man. So this bad man, the guy that he is trying to ruin the future of is Nate's childhood friend, Ed Kelly, who's a state's attorney. And so the next scene we have kind of a flip from normal. So instead of being at McCrory's, they're at like a nice lunch place. And Nate's like the most animated we've seen him in a long time.
Yeah.
Regaling Sophie with stories of stealing hot dogs from the ballpark. And, you know, just being like little hoodlums in Boston, like you do. And, you know, Ed kind of gets serious and he tells them that somebody planted Vicodin in his drawer because he had a stint in rehab as a minor, but he's put all that behind him. But recently someone planted Vicodin in a drawer in his desk and an assistant or an intern found it. And now he's been sent these incriminating photos of him. And
he knows it's Reed Rockwell. So Reed Rockwell works for an opposing politician. And this is what he does. He ruins people's careers for a living. Like, he finds dirt on people or makes up dirt on people to ruin careers.
Yeah. Awful. So bad. And you know, you know there are people like this out there.
Yeah. So he immediately is like, it's Reed, and you got to take them down. And they're sitting around going, what, they're trying to figure out what to do. Like, what, you know, he has no presence, right? Like, they're looking him up.
Yeah, he's got, like, no online presence.
They can't find an inn of any kind. And they're sitting around as a team, you know, bouncing ideas off. Like, what do we do for a guy who's a shadow? And how do you take down a guy who has no presence? And Nate says, you know, we got to make him famous, basically. We have to make him a hero. So that we can take him down.
Before that, he says, we have
to bring him out of the shadows.
Yeah. But we've got to, we would take him down the way that we would take me down.
Yeah. Yes. This is super important for the entire episode is we would take him down the way we take me down. We got to take him out of the shadows, make him a hero, because no one can refuse the limelight, the lure of the limelight, which Sophie says to Nate, and Nate's like, well, well, I can refuse the, and it's,
yeah.
Not,
and she's like, oh yeah, because you're never like the smug guy rubbing it into the our victims' faces or anything.
Yeah.
And he's like, are you being sarcastic? She's like, a little bit.
So they start trying to film Reed being a hero, right? They're gonna film him.
Yeah, they're gonna try to catch him doing a good deed.
Yeah, basically. So like, they layups. Parker pretends to be getting mugged and he just walks by. Sophie pretends to have her stroller, baby stroller, roll away from her down the street and he just ignores it.
Like, Hardison had to choke on a hot dog.
Yeah,
and then he is by another huge guy.
He has zero interest. Yeah. He doesn't even care, like, he doesn't even notice the people around him. He's on complete, like, he has shut down any empathy to human beings.
Yeah, he just like looks at them and then just keeps moving. Like, it's not even malicious. It's just like,
right. I don't know. It just would never occur to him to catch a baby carriage. Like, what?
He might. Why? Well, I'm like, he might just be a sociopath.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he has no response.
Yeah. A few things before we get into, like, how we're really going to make him famous. Yeah. I love, they kind of drop, they're like, all we know about him is, like, where he gets his coffee. That's all we know.
Yeah.
And Hardison has like a little bit of a professional crush on him that we see a couple times. He's like, so good. He's like on our level. Like, his first job where he took down a congressman by writing a paper, backdating it, bribing a clerk to get it into the Library of Congress.
Library of Congress.
And like taking him down that way. Like, Hardison's like, that's amazing. Like, I almost want to get him on the team.
Everyone's like, Hardison, no. No.
Nate's like, this guy's trying to destroy my best friend from childhood. And he's like, I said almost.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's good. Yeah. Hardison is a little bit of a crush.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of a crush. And then, so they've finally kind of settled on what they have to do to get this man to like step up and become a hero, whether he likes it or not. And they follow him to the coffee shop they mentioned.
It's wild. I just want to say, every plan of theirs that works in this episode is like a Rube Goldberg machine of like, why? How?
Yeah, I think that's like,
more so than usual, I think.
Yeah.
Every con that they run, you're like, you guys, is there not maybe a shorter route to this end?
And I think that's such a, you know, signifier of how off the rails this one gets so quickly that it's like the fourth thing they try and they have to go to like elaborate lengths.
Yes.
Because he's smart. They can't just do something simple. So they have to stage a robbery and a hold up. And the absolutely least qualified person on the team to do this stick up.
Mm-hmm.
Has to be the stick up.
Mm-hmm.
Which they were like in the commentary, they were pretty proud of the fact that they wrote Hardison like this young, like, or Aldous Hodge, this young, like, muscular black man, that they wrote him so against type that you're like, Hardison would be the worst person to like
the worst person.
Yeah, we're like in almost any other show, it'd be like, oh yeah, the young black guy. Yeah, he's gonna hold up the thing. But this one, everyone's like, oh my god, please don't do that. Oh,
so bad. So he's doing a not great job holding up this coffee shop. Sophie's there as a witness. And
Elliot's angry that bananas cost $3 here.
Elliot's real mad that the bananas at the coffee shop cost $3. And I'm with him, to be honest.
Oh, definitely.
I'm with you, Elliot. So,
and this isn't like a New York City bodega, like expensive bananas. It's right. Like a fancy coffee shop, because Rockwell's order is a half-calf civet, Peruvian civet with soy milk.
Soy.
Which civet... That's the coffee that's like picked out of the droppings of the civet cat. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Civet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like super pretentious. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and he orders it every single day because the waitress knows him. The barista knows him.
Oh, so, the waitress is played by Beth Rees Graff's sister.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I was like, she's very pretty. Who's that? Oh.
Ooh. There. So Reed is like, you don't want to take me hostage.
He tries to leave.
He does. He's like, I'm gonna go. No.
I'm bye.
I'm out, bye. And Hartson's like, no. So he's like, I would be a terrible hostage. The police won't care about me. You should take her hostage instead, pointing at Sophie. Like, she'll be a much better hostage because she's a pretty woman. And like, he tries to negotiate his way out of this situation by throwing a woman under the bus.
Yeah.
Like, he's a terrible person.
He's yeah.
He's just like, no, why would you do this? So, Elliot pushes him. Okay. Yeah. That's right. I was trying to remember where Elliot was.
Yeah.
So that it looks in the video like he tackled Hardison to get the gun away. And then Sophie gives this big interview about how he saved her life and he's a hero. And Hardison manipulates the views so that it's gotten supposedly like 2 million hits.
Yeah, he sets up like a worm on these social media sites. And his username is... not a Doctor Who reference, but is like a double nerd reference, because it's Underhill 24601. So,
oh my god,
Underhill being like a Fellowship of the Rings,
and 24601 being Jean Valjean's prison number.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I did not notice that, but wow, is that some nerdery right there?
So we have like the Star Wars stuff. And we didn't even talk about that earlier. Well, we did really touch on it, but like
they have an argument about CGI Yoda, because exactly. Parker's like, I love CGI Yoda, and Hardison's like, I'm so in love with you, and I regret it so much right now.
Yeah, he just like stares at her. He's so distracted and distraught by this knowledge that Elliot has to take over the like run this Hardison, like. He has to run the job. He's like, oh, this guy is blah, blah, blah. This season, like, the first episode especially, I think, like, starts really setting up, like, the OT3 stuff, like, in earnest to me. And I think, like, they were talking in the commentary, and I think what they start doing in this season... like really adds to that, because they talked about how they started focusing on always having them in a group of three and a group of two.
Mm-hmm.
Because like it is more dynamic to have three people or two people instead of having just one person doing things on their own. And also that way they had fewer scenes so they could put more things in between. They've like extended the act structure of those stories as well. So they have more acts. And so I think just the product of that is having these three together, and then you can build the relationship more and more. And I was just listening to the commentary going, oh, okay. Wow. Like taking notes, like get me learning things. I love it. Okay, back to this con. So we said Hardison makes this worm to get the hits on social media. Yeah. Then the next day he's at the coffee shop again and he's recognized by people in line who I guess everyone's come out to see.
And he gets a free half Peruvian soy latte.
Yeah. And then on the house. As he's walking down the street later, he gets stopped by some construction workers.
And they slow clap him. And it's amazing. I watched that scene like 4 times.
I love their little like asides. Like Hardison's like, seriously, a slow clap? And Elias is like, what? I got them in high school all the time. And if we ever write our prequel trilogy about the Leverage OT3, I'm gonna have that in my Elliot story.
Yes.
Slow claps. And I don't know what they'll be for, but
so good just existing with his hair. So yeah, he goes to work and his team is like, Mr. Rockwell, this seems bad. This does not seem good. And he's like, it's fine, it's a mistake, whatever, it's not gonna blow over. And they're like, have you seen the news? Like, I don't think it's gonna blow over.
He's like, just turn the TV off, let's go back to work. Also before that, the quintessential Leverage quote happens because Parker has to go up and flirt with him at a bar.
Yes, it's so good.
And she's so good. Like,
he's great. She does a great job.
If Parker sat down and talked to me like that, I'd be like, yes, I will give you my number. Here mm-hmm. you go.
She does this whole like, oh, you look really familiar. Where do I know you from?
My friend said you're famous. Are you like a drummer? But like, not as like teeny bopper.
Yeah. He's like, I'm on TV, and she's like, oh, well, you should give me your number. So she gives him her number, and then she's like, text me right now so I have it. And she stands there and watches until he texts it, which is the important part, like, because they need to be able to clone his phone.
Yeah.
So she plays it really, really well. She does this beautiful walk away, very Sophie. And then she says into her earpiece, like, I'm getting better at this. I didn't even stab anyone.
And Hardison at first is like, yeah. And then he's like, yes, we're so proud of you. New tradition, no stabbing Wednesday.
No stabbing Wednesdays. Oh, it's amazing. So good. It's a perfect moment between the two of them.
It is. So good. So, yeah, back at the office, Nate shows up at Crisis Center, which is the name of his PR firm, as an appointment, and he introduces himself as Henry Gillis, and he does the same thing as Rockwell, only he builds people up instead of tearing them down. And he's like, you know, we got to groom you to get ready to stand in the spotlight, which, you know, as we've stated before, Rockwell is like, I don't want to be in the spotlight, like, why would I need to be groomed for that? But as he goes to kick Nate out, the press are outside his door, just ready to take pictures. So Nate, this has been, I feel like it's been a little while since Nate's done a really long con like this, where he's playing a character.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, you know, being in the back and manipulating things, which I wonder if that also kind of leads to the unraveling of Nate in this episode. But he's so good because he knows exactly what to say,
yes,
exactly what buttons to push, and he kind of plays on Rockwell's belief that he's better than all the people that he takes down. And, yeah, you know, he's like, you are better than them. You deserve to be in the spotlight that they have. And then, you know, he's like outlining what exactly they're going to do. And, you know, he's like, oh, that show you want me on is like third tier. And he's like, oh, but if we do this, and because he knows the work, he's like, oh, he catches on pretty quickly, which I think further, like, he buys in even more to Nate's character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought that was really smart. I really like that. But he's like, all right, but we're going to start with, we got you an auditorium. It's standing room only. You have to do a motivational speech tomorrow.
This is one of my, like, both favorite gags that I've ever seen them do, and also the one where I felt the most bad for the innocent bystander.
Right?
Oh my god!
Oh man.
So they find a motivational, like, they look, there's like hundreds, I don't remember how many they said, but of motivational speeches going on in Boston.
Oh, yes. Are we going to talk about the scene where Parker and Elliot are going through all the brochures first?
Yes, yes. They're listing all of the motivational speeches that are happening. And they're making it over.
Parker is so into it. She's like, this one, she just talks for 2 hours about things she misses doing with her kids on a regular basis. And Elliot's like, did they die? No, they just went to college. and he complains that, you know, he complains about one called, you can't love him until you love you. And Parker's like, you should go to that one. And he, but in that, he doesn't like roll his eyes or like huff. He just kind of like looks at her and then keeps going. And I'm like, yes, Elliot, you should go to that.
Go to that one.
That's, yeah, that's my new headcanon, is that he went to that.
He went to that seminar. While everyone else was conning this poor elderly doctor.
Yeah, as later in the episode, I'll tell you when I think he goes to this seminar. So, yeah, like you were saying, they find this, like, great, like, literally great person, and they...
Yeah, it's like doctor who's, like, saved hundreds of lives.
He's a firefighter who'd been a firefighter for 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then donated his kidney or a liver or something to his best friend.
And then he's like, he's this sweet man, and he's going to give a speech about, like, doing good for people. And Sophie redirects him and takes his glasses away and then turns the lights up really tall, really high on an empty auditorium. And so he can't see when he's standing at the podium looking into the lights. And she tells him, like, it's going to look so bright, you're not going to see the audience. So he gives his whole speech to an empty auditorium, and she, like, turns the sound on, the applause fully on. It's very sad.
It's very sad. But he probably never knew that nobody heard.
No, I know. Meanwhile, the auditorium full of people that he was supposed to speak to instead get to hear from Human Trash Fire, Reed Rockwell, about how to be a hero, who gives this, like, rousing speech about how we're all heroes.
He's so nervous at the beginning, and then, like, Nate, like, builds him up about it, and he's like, oh my god, this thing he says to him before he goes on, he says, recognition, validation, those are the things that are gonna fill that hole that is somewhere deep inside you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oof. Nate, should we get you a mirror?
This reminds me that at the beginning of the episode when they're talking about when Nate asks, like, how would we have to take him down the way that we would take me down, Parker makes a crack about, like, well, we can't use booze.
And at that point, Elliot does look at her like, hey.
Okay.
We forgot to say that out loud.
Nate's like, she's not wrong.
Yeah.
But there's, like, this whole episode, we just see these, like, big, stark mirrors of Nate's worst side.
Yeah.
So he gives a great speech, though. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Both of them give good speeches. Like,
yeah.
Rockwell's is, like, just pulled out of his butt and is just, like, pithy sayings, but it really, people really like it. He, like, takes off his jacket. He's walking around without the mic.
Yeah.
And I think this is the point where I'm like, oh, no, he's really cute, because he looks very earnest and vulnerable and, like, sweet. And I'm like, okay, if that was who he was, then I'd be like, yes, down with
that. He hasn't.
But
then we find out about his past.
Yes, because Nate's like, all right, I'm gonna get you on CNN, we got all this stuff, they're just gonna run a quick background check on you.
Yep.
And the next
he's
day,
like, oh no,
oh
no, background check.
Yeah. The next day, after Nate has really partied really hard, he's, like, still in the same clothes, and Hardison, like, rocks his nose in front of his nose, because apparently he smells. But we find out that Rockwell's taken out $25,000 in small bills from his bank. So,
and Nate's like, for what? And they're like, well, nothing good.
Like, obviously. But I love, like, they didn't even, at that point, I don't think they knew what they were going to get. They were just, like, poking things and, like, let's just turn over as many rocks as possible and see what gross things are underneath.
Yeah, I mean, I think they just thought, like, if he took out 25 grand in small bills, we have to follow him and find out why.
Yeah. Well, just the, like,
who knows, but
the background check thing to keep him over.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Sophie and Elliot go to follow him. And there's, like, a weird line in the car. She's like, why wouldn't you let me drive? And Elliot's like, it's my car.
My car.
But also we know that Sophie drives like a maniac.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful car.
Yeah. Which he's had for, like, a few seasons now. So he had this in the...
Yeah, it's weird that they're having this conversation now.
Yeah, it was just, like, one line, and then they pull up. I guess they just wanted to be like, well, we were having a conversation in the car. I don't know. They followed Rockwell's goon, Mr. Kreese, and he's, you know, pulled up outside this house, and he's trying to give this shiny briefcase of money. Like, how much more obvious can you be that you've got, like, blackmail bribery money?
Not a good goon. He's bad at goonery.
Yeah, the person in the trailer does not want him near her, does not want this money, and things escalate pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So Elliot says things are going to get physical here in about 30 seconds to Nate over their earpieces. When I first watched it, I thought he meant, like, between the thug and the woman that he's talking to, like, he's about to get physical with her. But no, he means I'm about to get physical
right now.
And then
now.
He, like, busts out. And, you know, they have this fight. And as dumb as this goon is, he's pretty tough. Like, he doesn't go down right away.
Yes. So Elliot beats him with a screen door. Yes. Which is
would be really hard.
Like, no, I don't. I mean, yeah.
It's the way in which he was hit with the screen door. And then he takes off. He, like, leaves in his car, runs away like a baby. And we get to meet Emma, who is the woman that we saved. And I love, like, while Sophie's talking to Emma, Elliot is fixing the screen door that he broke.
Yeah, he's putting the screen door back on.
Which I think is fun because I've heard and I've read that, like, actors like to have something that they're doing in a scene. So they're not just staring at the other person who's talking. But we find out that this woman, Emma, knew Rockwell when they were in high school, and they kind of double dated to the prom, and on the way back they'd been drinking and their car crashed, and Rockwell's date died as a result of the car crash, and he had been driving the car, and Emma says she'd even taken a photo from the back seat, but when she took the photo to the police, took the camera to the police. Yeah. It had been altered to show that her boyfriend had been the one driving. And so he went to prison for 15 years.
Well, I mean, he might have gotten 25 years, but at this point it had been
15 years. Yeah.
He'd been in prison for this vehicular manslaughter that he did not commit. And they're like, how would he have faked this photo that was on, like, the film negative? Like, how would he have changed the film negative? And Hardison is like, well, it's ancient technology, but, like, he is the most excited he's ever been about trying to solve this, like, wild problem. And what he figures out is that Rockwell would have had to recreate every picture shot by shot, and only changing the one with the guy in the, I don't remember how he got the guy into the driver's seat to get a picture of him.
He talks about it in a second. So they have to go find the original negatives to see if they can figure this out. And so they go to the police archives. It's and then amazing. There's like this very slapstick routine. And we get the first instance of the word partisan, which is the Parker Hardison couple name. And this sweet old lady who's running the evidence room. And Parker being like the worst Parker, like she's so like, like making noise. Like, Parker, you're the best thief in the world. Why are you making so much noise?
Like rolling around in a rolling chair trying to find the evidence boxes and being
like yanking on the
least
final
self human being.
Yeah. Yeah. And Hardison's just having to kind of chat this old lady up, and she's having a great time. She's like, yes, young man, you may talk to me anytime you like. So back at the apartment, Hardison's like looking and like investigating the film in the background while Nate's and is like fighting with Elliot, because Elliot, they, you know, he's apparently come up with a new plan and Elliot does not like it.
Elliot is like, why are we doing another plan after everything? Elliot has been pretty vocal this whole time. Like, I mean, I think the whole team has, but Elliot is really like not taking any shit about the fact that this is a bad con. Like, they don't have a great plan.
Yeah.
Everything's gone wrong. Nate is way, way, way too emotionally involved.
Yeah. Yeah, Sophie keeps trying to save things too, but Nate just refuses to listen. And he finally just says, you know what, Elliot, just take the rest of this job off. What?
Yeah, no. Right. It's so childish and like, I'm sorry, teammate. I don't like the fact that you've questioned my authority, so just go leave. Yeah. And Elliot gets up and leaves. He's like, okay, bye.
And Parker goes with him.
Yeah, Parker goes. Also, she's like, oh no, I'm gone.
And Artisan's like still got like a little eye loop, and he's like looking.
Artisan's like, wait, but I have to figure out the thing with the pictures.
Where are my people going?
But she was gone.
Yeah, and Sophie tries to call him on it too. She says, "You know, it might not be conscious, but I think you're seeing all the things you hate about yourself in Rockwell." And he's like, "Yeah, could we not do this right now?" And then, but she's worried he's pushing so hard to ruin Rockwell that he's gonna ruin himself.
Ruin himself.
Yeah.
You know, running the con, it's not a clean con.
Yeah.
Because he can't be a clean con because he's making dumb decisions because he's off the rails.
Yeah. And then we have Hardison kind of sharing what he's deduced from these negatives. And he's like, he thinks that Rockwell developed the photos from the original world, took a picture of each one of those pictures in the correct order.
Yeah.
And then, like, in a dark, because he must have, this has not gone into it all, but this is how in my head it works. He had a dark room at home, and so he could have, with the original negative, manipulated it and, like, printed it and cut things out and, like, superimposed and then taken a picture of the edited photo so that it was on the correct part of the roll. But he's so good at it that it's seamless, like, that it's just like he was like a freaked out teenager and he was so good at it that he got away with it, and which is just like, if he was that good then, that's why Hardison has, you know, a work boner for him.
Well, and also, like, why on earth would the police, unless it had been a really sloppy job, like the police in this really small town that they're from, are not gonna think, like, in the course of 12 hours, because Emma says she took the camera to them the next day, right? Yeah. So in the course of 12 hours, this kid has, like, stolen a camera.
Sobered up.
Pictures. Right. Gotten, like, was in a terrible car accident. Like, got physically out of bed, stole a camera, took all of these pictures, put the new negatives back in the, like, put the camera roll, the new camera roll back in, like, with the camera back in Emma's possession, right where he took it from.
Yeah.
In time for her to take it to the police. And actually, like, the police in this tiny little town are not like, we have a criminal mastermind on our hands. They're like,
well, the other kid must have been driving.
Yeah, they're not here for that conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Also, my other theory is that from the time period that it was, it's one of those disposable cameras.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be even easier to be like, yeah, toss it in the window. There's the camera. Yeah. So you'd think that would have been impounded with the car after the wreck. If it was in the car with her. Maybe it was in her purse.
Yeah.
So we've always obviously spent a lot of time thinking about this.
How did this?
It's a really neat kind of idea of how you could get away with this crime.
Yeah.
Which I think they mentioned in the commentary that they're like, well, we kind of wrote ourselves into a corner and then we had to figure out how we would have done it.
Well, and then to get the next step of the con, like to get him out of, okay, so they have at this point forgotten about Nate's childhood friend who is being,
like, he's gone.
He's out. No one, even Nate, has completely forgot that this dude exists. And then
they're going to get justice for Emma
and Emma's boyfriend, who is wrongfully imprisoned.
Yes.
And they're going to get, this life that's been stolen from Emma because, you know, he had a scholarship. He was going to go to college and he was going to propose and they were going to be together and it was going to be this great thing. And then he went away to prison. And so, like, they're going to get justice for Emma because this guy killed a girl driving drunk and then framed somebody else for it and is a real piece of work.
Yeah.
So, but the con that they come up with to get him on this
is,
again, like a Rube Goldberg machine. Like,
yeah. It requires at least 2 flashbacks later.
Yeah.
3 flashbacks?
It's a lot of, wow, you guys, you might be off the rails here.
Which I love. Like, I have to be honest, like, please, I want as many twists and turns. I want to not know what the hell happened until you tell me. I love it. I'm not here to solve the mystery. I want you to do it for me.
So, Emma calls.
But I love this moment first. Rockwell's lackey has to go and admit to him that he was beat up by a screen door.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So good.
And then Rockwell gets a call.
Rockwell gets a call from Emma,
who's like, you can't buy me off with 25 grand. That's not enough for the life that you stole from me. What about 250 grand?
Because I have more evidence that I found.
Yeah, I have more evidence. I have photos that are going to put you away for life. So the camera pans out and you see that Sophie is there, like, feeding her lines about what to say. And she says, meet me with the money. I'm going to have an old Buick. And I'll trade you the evidence for the money.
Under the bridge. Is there just one bridge?
Just the one bridge in Boston. Yeah.
The one bridge. I've only been there once, so I don't know.
Just the one. so they, maybe it's in their hometown, but it's not. It's in the city.
Yeah, because she gives
them an hour. They're not driving around in their little dinky hometown.
She's in the city. She's at McRory's.
Yeah.
She's in the back of McRory's.
Yeah. So,
then Nate shows up because they're like, okay, Nate, it's on you.
Yeah.
And he walks in and Rockwell's losing it. He's like throwing things. He's pours them drinks. And I love Nate just like, okay. Like, he's on his phone. He's like kind of unaffected, disappointed. But he's like, you know what? This might be a good idea. Like, that she wants so much money means that she's just looking for one payout. If we pay her off now,
they'll queue all over time.
You're going to make this money back so easy. And he says, you know, you're at the whim of the media now, and you know exactly what they'll do with this if they find out about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, which Rockwell is the guy who does this to people.
He's like, oh, I know exactly what they would do. And so he gets his money, but he tells his lackey, he's like, I'm not letting her get away with this. Like, she can't come back and try to get money from me again. So you take the Land Rover and, like, take her out afterward.
He's a winner!
So great! And at this point, I'm going, why did I think he was cute?
The actor is cute.
Yeah, that's true. And but, as far as I know, he's nice.
Yeah. So he gets into the back of this old Buick. when he starts, the person in front is like wearing a hoodie up over their blonde hair. Emma's blonde, right? Mm-hmm. And but he also hasn't seen Emma in 14 years, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, he like starts to talk to her and is like, oh, it's, you know, it's been a long time kind of thing. And she floors it mm-hmm. and starts just driving away. And he's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, stop the car. And she's like, I'm not dumb. I'm not going to just give you this evidence. Like,
we're going to get it. And then he realizes, wait, who are you? You're not Emma. I recognize you. Where do I know you from? And I like that he didn't immediately place her.
Yeah. Well, because it makes sense. Because he met her in a bar for 5 minutes.
Yeah. And he's only seen like a quarter of her face.
Yeah.
Under a hoodie as she's driving and he's freaking out. And then he's like, what are you doing? And then a truck hits them, like T-bones them. And they have this glass everywhere. He gets hit in the face with the briefcase, which we were assured in the commentary is a soft briefcase. So it didn't actually happen. And then when he comes to, Parker is slumped over in the front seat and he's like, oh God, not again. No.
Again.
Gets out, takes the money, and he runs. And then he's getting back to his office and he's on the phone, like leaving a voicemail for Kreese. Like, where are you? Where are you? And his office door is open and he opens it up and, oh, it's Boston PD.
Yay!
They're just like, look, very disappointed. I wonder how they got in. Did they have a warrant that quickly?
Well, I mean, they have him. So we find out from one of the flashbacks, one of the several flashbacks, that they have him on like the traffic cams.
Yeah.
Hitting this, like getting in this car, like driving in this car accident and, mm-hmm. and leaving after he runs into like, so if they had the traffic cam footage of him fleeing the scene of an accident, I mean, I think it would be pretty easy to get a judge to give a warrant, and you know.
Yeah.
Although, that's really fast, though. That's true.
But whatever, it's leverage.
It's fine.
Yeah.
this is a lot of con for us to.
Yeah, it's true. Like, let's not apply logic to all of this. And so they take him back, and he's being questioned by our new recurring law enforcement officer. Her name is Detective Grayson. And he's like a dick to her because he's a dude. He's like, where'd you get that dollar store badge?
Also, she's real pretty.
Mm-hmm. And she's like so no-nonsense. When it was written, her character was written, it was written for her to be from Alabama and to like have an accent. And so when the actress came in to read for it, she read with an accent and then she got cast and she asked John Rogers, she's like, do I have to do the accent? Like, is that necessary to the character? And they went, because they wrote her for an episode that's later in the season, and then they put her in this episode as well to kind of build that story. Her name's Val Landrum, by the way. And they were like, well, let's make sure there's not some, like, backstory that it's important for. And there wasn't. He was just like, yeah, I don't know. I just, you know, from Alabama. So she got to drop the accent, which would have been hilarious.
Yeah, it's good.
Kind of weird in Boston, but I mean, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, people, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so she's like, well, look, I've got this security cam footage of you getting out of the Land Rover with the briefcase after you T-boned this car. And she says, you know, the victim was this woman that you've been calling constantly on your phone.
Yes.
And it's from when they cloned his phone earlier when she got him at the bar. We also see this flashback of Hardison altering the traffic cam footage.
Yes.
And to show
Rockwell coming out of the SUV.
Yeah.
That T-bones them.
Am I correct in thinking Hardison is using his own tech Like, it looks like he's in he's in Rockwell's studio using his.
I think so. But he's also, I mean, he's very much using what Rockwell did 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, he's using the exact same tactic.
Yeah. Which I love. It, like, all comes back around to bite you in the ass, Reed Rockwell. And he's like, no, I was being blackmailed for this other accident. And he's like, but I didn't do that. And he's like, look, I was being blackmailed. You've got the briefcase. Like, there's money in there. And that's, you know, that'll be proof. But they're like, oh, this briefcase? And they open it up, and it's the evidence and the original photos that he, before he talked to them. And then we get another flashback, and we see that Elliot had tracked down the lackey, beat him up again, stole the Land Rover. He's the one who hit the car.
Yes.
And he switches the briefcases. So he took the money.
So there's this big media blitz of, like, shortest hero in history, like, you know, Reed Rockwell, who came to prominence earlier this week for saving, you know, stopping a robbery in progress, comes out, you know, killed someone in a hit and run 14 years ago, and, you know, ironically was caught while hurting someone in a hit and run
again.
And so he gets taken down. He gets built up to a hero and taken all the way down. Mm. And they're like, oh, do you think Emma's excited to have her boyfriend back at home? You know, he's released from prison. Oh, there's a big media blitz of, like, you know, man released after 14 years of being, you know, falsely accused.
Yeah. And Ed Kelly gets to let him out. So we finally, you know.
So the best part of the entire episode, mostly because I forgot Ed Kelly existed, is when Reed is talking to the lawyer. He's ranting about how he's going to get out, and it's, you know, they can't do this to him.
This was doctored. This was digitally altered.
And Ed Kelly walks in as the person who's going to be going up against him, and he just has this moment of, like, realization that he's completely screwed.
Tell me about it. Yeah. I know all about doctored photos.
Yeah. It's so good. It's such a perfect, you're like, oh yeah, that guy. What's up, guy? So yes, Ed Kelly gets to have, like, a really good one-liner, and Emma gets her boyfriend back, and also Elliot left them a briefcase with $25,000 in it to start their new life, because Elliot is a teddy bear.
Screen doors.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, like, she can buy as many new screen doors as she wants.
Exactly. And then Nate semi-apologizes. He's like, that got a little out of hand. Sorry. And he's apologized several times at this point. Which, you know, he's getting better at it. And Parker just kind of brushes off. She's like, yeah, it was worth it. Nobody else really says.
Yeah.
Video. And then Sophie, you know, she's like, you used to be an honest man, and then you were a criminal, and now I don't know which one you're on, like, which one you are. You're like, because it's obvious he's got, like, a struggle going on.
Yeah.
And she says she doesn't know which side she wants to win out.
Yeah.
Gives him a kiss on the cheek and then walks out, and this next little bit kind of goes into it too. Like, Nate is not a nice man.
Right.
Like, he's never been nice. He's never going to be nice.
Right.
But do you need to be nice, right? Does he need to be nice? Does he is doing good enough? Can he be a good man and not a nice man? And I don't know. There's lots of stuff to go into there.
I mean, Sophie, in terms of, like, being in love with Nate and wanting to be with him, doesn't necessarily want him to be nice. She's a jewel, like, she's a con artist.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, she runs around with, you know, a team of con artists for fun. She's not necessarily looking to like spend her life with someone who's nice. But she, and I don't even know, like, I mean, I think at this point in the team's life as Leverage, they do want to be doing good, you know, you know, they've just, they're all in, the rest of the team is like on board with like, we're going to do good and we're going to screw over the bad guys. But I even think that if Nate were like, not being evil, but like not necessarily like being a full on Leverage do-gooder, she would be fine with it because like, you know, she's not, this does not have like the strongest moral compass of anyone, but I think that she does not want to see him like lie to himself and destruct and be like a wrecking ball in his friends' lives and in the team.
You know,
she just wants him to get it together, like whichever side he chooses.
No, I think that's so true. And she says earlier in the episode when they're pulling the con on the man who's supposed to be giving the speech, she's like, I mean, it's a good thing we don't believe in hell because what we're doing is awful. And Artisan's like, Nate believes in hell and I believe in hell. And she's like, oh, that's right. Well, I don't, so it's fine. Because like she's not led by that moral compass,
right?
But Nate still is, as much as I think he wishes he wasn't. And like that thing that he said to Reed, you know, this is gonna feel like that that adoration, acknowledgement of you doing something is gonna fill that hole in you. And Nate's trying to put these things in. I almost said put these things in his hole. He's trying to fill this hole in himself with like doing these good deeds and like drinking. And he's, you know, it's never going to work. There's that line in Tombstone when Doc Holliday is talking about people like Johnny Ringo. And he's like, they can never drink enough, smoke enough, hurt enough, kill enough to fill that hole. Like they were just born with it. But Nate just has to like learn how to accept this about himself. And
I mean, also probably he could get some therapy for his grief. Like he lost his kid and his marriage and his job and his career, and he like did not think perhaps,
and also he had a therapy. He had a traumatic childhood, like you know,
he could use some Al-Anon. Also like he had like a catastrophically traumatic year in terms of losing his wife, his child and his career and all of his friends and his career all at once in one fell swoop. And his grief, none of it in any reasonable way.
Like, and then, and then
he really cannot get it together. Cause if he stopped moving and like trying to get recognition and.
If he thought about it for a minute, it would.
He's gonna have to think about his kid and his wife and his career and.
And how he like in essence, like everything that he'd built up, like he'd come out of, you know, being under his dad's wing to like going to seminary to like getting married and like making himself into what he thought was like a good man, which is probably also why he wanted to go into the priesthood to be good and be the opposite of his dad. And, you know, and then he's like, okay, I'm going to hunt down criminals. I'm going to like be the good guy. And then have it all taken away from him, everything he'd worked so hard for, and then like kind of to jump on the opposite, the train going the opposite direction. Like, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to hang out with criminals now.
You guys, I tried to be good and it didn't work. I mean, not like, I don't want to downplay Nate's horrific grief and losing his child, obviously, like I'm a parent. But he definitely, instead of being like a rational adult about it, because he's, his childhood was so screwed up and he has no like coping mechanisms, he just was like, I'm gonna take my toys and screw you guys over.
And I'm still gonna help people because then I can tell myself I'm not being bad. I'm gonna be with the bad people, but they're not really bad. I don't understand. I thought I was gonna be bad. it was like not working out the way he
bad guy.
He's like, oh god, and now they're my family. What's happening? And they expect things from me. And they want me to be better? God. this isn't working
this
out.
This woman wants to have a relationship with me, but I just want to complain about how my marriage failed forever because it makes me feel like I'm a victim.
Yeah, and she, like,
wife doesn't love me anymore.
Yeah.
Therapy, Nate. Love you. Therapy. Yeah.
Therapy.
Maybe a grief group. Something for adult children of alcoholics. Come on.
I mean, they should find that table full of brochures for him.
Yeah.
Because he needs all those things.
Quit drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they did it. They got Ed Kelly's career safe, although we all forgot he existed.
Ed who?
Emma, her money and her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Reed Rockwell's behind bars. For
they did a bunch.
For a crime he did commit and a crime he didn't commit. Both.
Oh, well, a crime he was about to want to.
He intended to commit it. Yeah. He just didn't get there.
I mean, they just took out the middleman.
It's fine. He deserved it. He had it coming.
Exactly. And then at the very end, we've got Nate still watching the news, and he gets a call on his phone from some mysterious old white man in a car. And, you know, he's guessing that this is the guy who had the apartment bugged earlier.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Wiretaps are illegal. Ha, 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 ha. And, you know, he says, like, good job on the Reed Rockwell thing, but we had a bunch of outstanding accounts of him. Any chance you'd want to take them over for a substantial fee? And Nate's like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
And the other guy's like, you do so many good things. You think you're such a good guy. And then he, like, hangs up.
And then we get this overarching big bad.
Mm-hmm. And I love this last shot. Like, Nate walks. Well, it partly doesn't make sense to me, but so he's, like, walking out of the bar. He leaves all the lights on in the bar. And then he goes to, like, the little hallway to the back room. And there's, like, a hanging light above him. It looks very industrial. And he, like, switches that one off. And, like, that's the end of the episode. And it's really cool.
It's cool looking, but also doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. But that's fine. I mean, that's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah. And also, so the scene with the guy in the car, it's like raining outside, but apparently it was really raining really hard. And they had like a tarp over the car, and the rain was like making all the lights and stuff spark. It was like really dangerous.
Yeah.
They all lived, so that's good.
They all lived, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the 15 minutes job.
The 15 minute job, yeah.
Any more thoughts on this one? I feel like we dove really deep.
It's a good episode. It's really good.
Yeah. It's
really good. Everybody's on point. Not a ton of Sophie, which is, you know, we always talk about this, but there's like really, Hardison is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, as always.
He's killing it. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. It's good. Nate's having a full breakdown.
Yeah. Full breakdowns. We have some OT3 building. It's getting really good. This season. I've said it on other episodes. I'm really excited for like every episode in this season.
Really good.
Like the experimental job's coming up, the office job's coming up.
Everything is pitch perfect. They've all got their
boys' night out. The hot potato job.
Yeah.
The carnival job, which Robin's going to be on. That one's exciting.
I don't have a high slate, but what I do want to say is that both Steve and I have spent a lot of our professional lives obsessed with graphic novels and making sure that graphic novels get their due and being on committees and trying to change how librarians and teachers use graphic novels. And yesterday, the Youth Media Awards gave graphic novel awards in almost every category, including the first ever Newbery Award to a graphic novel, which was by far the best book that came out last year.
Yes!
New Kid is incredible. And so I just wanted to say it is off topic of heists, but graphic novels are the best.
Yeah.
And we are both committed graphic novel professional librarians, and it's super hard. Happened yesterday, and it's so exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was like, God, that was yesterday.
Yeah.
Week gone.
Yesterday was long.
Yeah. Yesterday was a really long week. Yeah. It was so exciting. That was like, and I tweeted, you know, I love, the only thing that I love more than like finding out that a book has won an award and going to get it off the shelf to put its sticker on it immediately is that when I look up the book, all of our copies are already checked out because it's such a good book. And that was the case with New Kid. Like I was like, all right, I'm going to go see if it's on the, nope. And okay, I'll put them on hold. But then I got to get the Undefeated and reread the Undefeated.
Yay.
I love Kwame Alexander so much.
So much.
And I love Kadir Nelson, like, more than life.
Oh my God, his art is so beautiful. Oh my God.
So good. Like, oh my God. Everything he does. Like, why? How? Like, If You Plant a Seed is, like, one of my favorite books ever. And I read it at story time all the time. I'm like, all right, kids, we're gonna read this book again.
Again.
I'm going to try to explain to you about kindness. It's kind of a tough topic, but let's go.
That's great.
Okay, so I have a little high slight.
Okay.
It's not little. It's only little in that I did not do a ton of research on it. So I'm basically just going to read some from this article.
Okay.
And then I get to like read some German words.
Yay.
This is from The Guardian, and it happened in November, so not too long ago. So the title is Jewelry of Immeasurable Worth Stolen in Dramatic Dresden Museum Heist.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think if I've done this one. If I have, I apologize. I'll try to edit it out. Yeah, so it says thieves in the German city of Dresden have broken into one of Europe's largest collections of art treasures, making off with three sets of 18th century jewelry of immeasurable worth in what German media has described as the biggest such theft since the Second World War.
Oh, some Parker-style jewelry theft happening in Germany.
The dramatic heist took place at dawn on Monday after a fire broke out at an electrical distribution point nearby, deactivating the museum's alarm and plunging the area into darkness. Like,
so good!
Despite the power cut, a surveillance camera filmed two men breaking into the Grünes Gewölbe, which is the Green Vault, at Dresden's Royal Palace. Volker Long, the head of Dresden police, said the thieves smashed a window and cut through a fence before approaching and breaking open a display cabinet in the Grünes Gewölbe's jewel room in a targeted manner. Officers were at the scene within minutes of being alerted to the robbery shortly before 5 a.m. local time, but the suspects had escaped. A burning car found in Dresden early on Monday may have been the getaway vehicle, police said. They've set up roadblocks on motorway approach roads around the city in an attempt to prevent the suspects from leaving, but the close proximity of the gallery to the Autobahn is likely to have helped the thieves' speedy escape, police said. German media reported the losses from the burglary could run into the high hundreds of millions of euros, but the director of Dresden State Art Collections, Marian Ackermann, said it was impossible to estimate the value of the items. We cannot give a value because it is impossible to sell, she said, appealing to the thieves not to break the collections into pieces. The material value doesn't reflect the historic meeting. Ackermann said the stolen items include three priceless sets of diamonds, including brilliant cut diamonds, which belong to an 18th century collection of jewelry assembled by the museum's founder. And then it kind of goes into the history of all this stuff. So that's wild.
Yeah, there's a lot of diamonds.
Yeah. And part of me is like, oh, that sucks that this piece of history was stolen. Part of me is like,
that's a cool heist.
It was a cool heist, but also like, where did those diamonds come from? Like,
yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But apparently the Grünes Gewölbe has been a tourist magnet since 1724 when it first opened to the public.
Wow.
That was a long ass time.
It's an old museum.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, oh man, there's a Dutch art detective named Arthur Brand.
That guy needs some novels about him.
Yes. who made headlines earlier this month after uncovering a long-lost gold ring belonging to the writer Oscar Wilde.
What? It should be mine.
What? I know, right?
It's me. I'm the biggest Oscar Wilde fan. Just go straight to me. Fine.
Arthur Brand. You can contact Corey here. So that's, yeah, I'll put the link to the article in the show notes.
Never say no when people ask me to be on the podcast.
All right. Yes. And that's good. That's
Corey,
a good
tell
thing.
People where they can find you on the internet.
I feel like this podcast wouldn't have been made.
You
if
can
you
find me on Twitter no, at like, Helen's
sure.
Twin.
I'll be on your podcast.
Helen S. Twin. Or
I rewatch
on
a show
Instagram,
I haven't watched in years.
Is not locked on like, my Twitter. You can see me
no one
just taking pictures of my
can refuse
ridiculously
the allure
large collection of brooches.
Of the limelight.
Because
I really love this.
This is
project
true.
That you made. Considering
my New Year's resolution was to wear my
collection.
No one can refuse the allure
of
Christian King's hair.
So I've been
true.
Documenting that
or,
on Instagram
true.
To where
or his bootcut jeans.
Which I extremely am.
He's committed
same,
to a bootcut.
Same place, Helen's twin.
A bootleg, sorry.
Yeah, that's where you can find me.
No bootcut, yeah. Excellent. Bootleg is like when
and you can find me on
right.
Twitter
that's
at
right.
Librarians As librarians, we're not, that's not cool.
No,
so you won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks.
You can now
so
watch Leverage for
Van
free on
IMDb job and
TV.
Lisa Lim will be back
so
to talk with me about
you
that
You can't
one.
Stream it or
exciting.
Only ladies like me.
Epic flashback.
Go to your
episode.
Library and check them out.
Yeah. So many.
That's a good alternative.
It is a good alternative. Get your content from paid places so that the people who make the content can get paid.
And they can continue to make the content that you
yeah.
want. Yeah.
You don't pay people for content, they stop making it.
Yeah.
Because they can't afford to. That's
then
how
it can be chewed on. That's a little cycle.
Charlie says, pay artists.
Exactly. Speaking of which, if you'd like to donate to our Patreon. I've already started recording, by the way. I forgot to plug the Patreon. There's 2 articles up there for anybody who goes in who wants to do it. You can read my articles, my little book reviews. Are you ready to start?
Yeah.
All right.